Good morning. With the quorum present and past the time for start, I'd like to call the Lassard Sands Outdoor Heritage Council meeting to order. On behalf of the members and staff, I welcome you here. First item on the agenda for us to consider is the approval of the agenda. Member Hartwell moves approval of the agenda. Discussion on the motion of the agenda. All those in favor of the motion to approve the agenda as presented, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion is carried. Agenda is approved. Thank you. So the minutes of the November 5th meeting, 2015, that was held in Spicer. Your pleasure with those minutes. Motion by Member Kingston to approve the minutes as presented. Discussion on the motion of the minutes. None. The chair would call the question. All those in favor of the motion to approve the minutes as presented, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion is carried. Minutes are approved. Thank you. Any members that have a conflict of interest on any of the items on today's agenda? To the Executive Director's report. Johnson.
Mr. Chair and members, good morning. Just a couple of items for you. First of all, I think we'll go into the give you an update on the status and final reports. And I'm going to turn that over to Sandy. Go with Sandy Smith.
In your package, I just put a listing of the 9, 10, and 11 projects and kind of the status of where they're at, and I'm very happy to report that everything's coming along great. Final reports have trickled in, and also on December 1st, there was a deadline for people to submit their annual real property interest reports, which is that kind of annual assessment that they have to send to the office stating that the land that was purchased and used is being used for the project was intended. And those appear to be coming as well, so everybody's keeping the deadlines.
Well, good news on this, but
Member Hartwell. So, can you just clarify the 2009 final report being drafted since February?
They have federal funding, so they get an extension until to the end of the federal funding for that.
Which is when?
The federal grant period. Actually, I don't even know.
I mean, it seems like a long time.
That's because it is a long time.
But if there's a final reporting grant form since February, what takes 9 months to approve to go from a draft to a final?
They have a lot of easements and NOFAs that have to get recorded and final paperwork, and it's quite, you know, labor intensive to get all that done.
Mr. Chair, we do have Mr. Penning here from Bowser if you'd like to have him speak to this.
I'm just curious.
Penning, please come forward.
There's a condition.
Bill Penning, Easement Section Manager with Bowser. I was actually reading appropriation language, but so you're asking about the 2009 RIM WRP appropriation and why the final report is not in yet?
That is what I was asking.
Yeah, that's actually something that we want to take up with staff and perhaps eventually the council as we work through this, because there's an interesting dilemma that happens with final reports when you do an acquisition and you do restoration afterwards, because on that appropriation, every easement is closed. Most of the easements have had the initial restoration done, and which is to say that the grass has been planted, the structures are in. However, there's an establishment period that almost always comes along with restoration of native parcels, native grasses and forbs, which could be up to probably 3 years afterwards where you go in and clip it or burn it. And so there's this extended timeline that occurs. And so the guidance that we were given in the past is that the final report cannot officially be submitted until the last dollar is expended, which means that you could potentially have a 9-year period between the time the money is appropriated and the time that the last dollar is expended. That is to say, in worst case scenario, you have 4 years before your easement gets closed and another couple years before the practice gets installed if you have bad weather or if it's a complicated restoration, and then 3 years or so of clipping after that. And that's actually on our list of things that we want to take up and try to find if there's a way that we can submit a final report prior to the very last dollar being expended, because it makes us look like we're not doing anything. It creates an enormous amount of paperwork for not only us but for staff. So that's a long-winded explanation of why the final report isn't complete. All easements are closed. Most of the restorations are done.
Further questions?
That's going to be ongoing every time there's a proposal and every time you get an appropriation.
That is correct. And the fact that there's federal money, this is RIM-WRP, which we all know got screwed up, and so there's special circumstances there. But let's take something where there's never a federal dollar in it. It could still be 9 years. That's worst case scenario. It's not clearly our intention. In most cases, we can probably be done if it's a grassland restoration, close the easement in a year, get the practice in the next year, 3 years of clipping, 4 or 5 years, you're done. But worst case scenario, the way things are set up now, it could be 9 years.
Does it make any sense to bifurcate those activities?
I think we should have a broader discussion about that, because I'm speaking now from a RIM easement perspective, but we have three, I think, trigger points where we could potentially submit final reports as long as everybody knows what it means. One is when the last easement is closed, you still have all the restorations to do and money will still be spent. Two is when the last installation is done, so the last seed hits the ground, the last structure is built. And three is when the last dollar is expended, which means the last mowing is done, which could be several years later. Right now, we're all the way out to three, based upon previous guidance that we've been given. I'm hoping we can find something to move it up to one or two before we start doing that, for all of our sakes.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I was thinking also in terms of the acquisition being one proposal and the restoration enhancement work being another proposal.
I understand what you're saying. I see some practical issues there that we might want to talk about. In essence, in the case of RIM, we really can't take a piece of land and not restore it.
Right.
So if they're separate proposals and the acquisition gets funded and the restoration doesn't, then what do we do? That's the problem.
Well, if it wasn't for the federal match, we probably wouldn't even be talking about it.
Okay.
So I'm really schizophrenic about all of these proposals.
Right.
I love them and I hate them.
Right. Understood.
Yeah.
Other questions? More comments with regard to that issue?
Thank you.
Thank you for taking time.
Mr. Chair, to continue, the second item we have on the director's report is the land acquisition report. And just to give you an update on that, we don't have, as you've seen your packets, we don't have an update or a draft of that land acquisition report yet. So we won't have that draft until the January meeting for you. Just to give you a little more insight into that, we have had wonderful response from all the partners, and only one partner right now waiting for some final information, and that's basically because of some township range and section or TRDS discrepancies, making sure those all fit together so we have the right information to get the revenue information or tax information. So we'll have that report, a draft of that, we anticipate before the January meeting. And that's the extent of my report.
Questions for Executive Director Johnson with regard to those items or any other items? Thank you, Mark. We'll move to item 5 on the agenda, and that's the 2016 council schedule. And was Representative McNamara going to return, or is he gone again for?
He's returning. He left him in his car.
We'll call on the executive director to lead us through the. There are some conflicts with LCCMR.
Yes, Mr. Chair, LCCMR had asked us to take a look at our two schedules, ours versus theirs. The LCCMR has a couple of, most of their meetings are in June, July, one in November, and a couple in December. There are two conflicts that are head-to-head with our schedule at this point, and the reason we bring those up is that we have one member in common, which is Representative McNamara, who attends both meetings. And the other thing is just for you all, if you like to sit in on the others or if they like to sit in on ours, on our meetings. The first conflict is June 29th of 2016. And as you can see, their dates on those in June are actually the 7th, the 8th, the 21st through the 23rd, and the 28th through the 30th. So they have the majority of the month booked up with their meetings, and I don't know if there's a way that we can really get out of the 29th. As staff, we looked at that date, and that's pretty much where we need the meeting from a standpoint of getting all of the final APs set for the or ready for your review and so on. So within our calendar, the 29th really fits nicely. My suggestion would be that we keep the meeting at that date unless there's some other reason. And then Representative McNamara, when he comes in, maybe he can chime in. I know this last year he was able to, at least one time when we had a head-to-head meeting, of attending the meeting here and shifting back and forth as needed. The other head-to-head comes in November on the 15th. That's their council meets on the 15th and so it talks. That's the, I think we originally had plopped in the 17th and then we moved it back to the 15th. So it could be that we could move it to the 16th. If that were the will of the council, or if the council says keep it at the 15th, it depends on your wishes.
Move it to the 18th.
That's the last we can do.
I know.
Oh.
I'm aware.
Good shot. You get yours.
Get her done. Why did we move it in the first place?
I don't remember. Was there a conflict that one of the members had during that period? Okay. So that's why we moved it to the 15th. So is the 16th going to work?
The 16th is fine for me.
Okay. All right. We will.
Ask the man. Where's
your man? Thank you.
Merry Christmas, Chef.
Merry Christmas.
We're talking about
this schedule right now. You've got to focus your LCR and us. We're together.
Next November?
2016.
Oh. Rep. Mayor, if you could, in your packet, go to the schedule. We're on item number 5, and for the 2016 schedule, it's in your packet.
Mr. Chair, if you could read between the lines, I wouldn't be worried about my conflict with LCCMR. And it's not because I plan to retire.
Oh.
Well, I wouldn't want to start any false rumors about it. Me getting out of the legislature, but I would not be worried about a conflict with me being... Conflict at LCCMR in next November?
In November, yes. And yeah. So we were looking to move the...
I will come. He'll be in the legislature, but I wouldn't be worried about a conflict that I may have as a member of the LCCMR. Either I'll find two ways to be at the meeting or...
So we're looking to move the meeting of this council to the 16th, which would be the day after the LCCMR meeting.
Oh, well, that would be nice, but that's up to you, Mr. Chair. And to clarify further, I have no intention of leaving this body at all. And I have no plan to leave LCCMR, but I did want you to schedule around one individual person.
Sorry. We would move to the council meeting to November the 16th. We do have a conflict also in June on the 29th, but we're going to keep that date, and so you'll have to decide which group you want to join that date.
Mr. Chair, if I remember right, that was a tour of LCCMR on the 29th, maybe, no? Is it July or June, did you say?
June.
Oh, okay, that may be a good thing.
So the schedule that's before us for meetings in 2016, the only change would be in November. That would be on November 16th. We'll ask staff to put out a new schedule. Is there a motion to adopt the meeting schedule for 2016? Motion by Member Kingston to adopt the 2016 council schedule with the one change in November. Discussion, further discussion with regard to the motion or the schedule. Chair then place the question. All those in favor of the adopting the schedule with the one change, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion is carried and council schedule is adopted. Thank you. Item number 6 then is the call criteria. Okay. Mr. Delco, you're going to lead us in that call criteria discussion?
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chair and Council members. Before you have agenda item number 6, as you recall, back in our November meeting, we had a brief discussion about the call and whether or not council members felt it was necessary to review the call, review the criteria, see if there are any changes that we wanted to make. And if you do want to do that, now would be the time that we would need to start discussing that and working on it so that it's ready in time for the, get it ready by March. And so if we're going to do this and want to move forward with it, we need staff is asking for direction today on how to move forward with it so that we can have meetings and or you don't want to have meetings and want direct staff to do it, that we have time in January, February to have it ready to be published in March. So that's why we're talking about it so early, so that we have time to get ready. We had been provided direction to go out and get information and feedback from council members, and we had 6 council members provide feedback, anything from it looks okay to a lot of detail, and you could tell that you really had gone into the weeds about scoring and thinking about different things. And then we also went and got anonymous feedback from project managers. And those comments ranged all over the board, and those comments are actually attached to your packet here. And so I guess to start the discussion, maybe what we're looking for is maybe getting some of your feedback and what you think of the comments. And then obviously then after that is getting clear direction from you. You know, your options are the whole council can discuss this, and you know, we can have extra meetings maybe. It depends on how in-depth and how much change we want to make. I think that will kind of dictate how many meetings we want to have. We can have a work group if there's, you know, council members who are, feel very strongly about changing it. We could have a subset of council members and have a work group, and obviously that would be subject to the open meeting law. So that would be one consideration. And then the third option that we could do is just you could direct staff to come up with options for the council, and then the council can take those and do it as they please. Some of my take-home messages, I would say, from the comments, I thought there were two kind of themes. There were comments on the actual proposal and the scoring part, and then more from the project managers. I think there were comments on the administrative side on things of, you know, how they apply for the funds, the website, and what works and what doesn't work. So I think there's two things, and I think staff, if council or staff feel strongly enough that we could, as staff, kind of tackle the second part with the administrative and just the, you know, nitty-gritty workings of how the proposal will work, the online system, working with the managers to make sure that, you know, they're able to provide the kind of information that you guys want. But the direction and the criteria, the scoring, that is something that should come from staff or from council. So those are my comments, and we're open to hear what other council members have to say.
Questions for Mr. Fidalgo? Member Wilkins.
Thank you. When we do scoring, well, first I read through everything and kind of digest it, and then I go back and score. But when we do scoring, sometimes we have to do a little search for the criteria, and I'm wondering, have we, I think the member has addressed it here, the scoring criteria, could that strictly follow the format of the RFP? So that, you know, we scored the first item, and that is listed, you know, as the first item, so to speak, the second item, the third, or else have the scoring criteria changed one or the other so that we could go through the proposal and with this at hand and go through, well, yeah, this is my first score, here it is, this is my second score, here it is, the answer, the third score, the fourth score. Have them directly line up, because we do a little bit of a hunting around here, and it could be that the scoring sheet has changed. It wouldn't have to be that the RFP has changed, but just to line a little bit more with our thought process as we're scoring.
Mr. Chair, I think that's something that we could look into. I think what we need to remember when we want to make a change is that we have a certain way everything is formatted in the online system, so any changes we make, we just want to make sure don't totally change everything by making one change. But I think that makes sense, that we could probably work on something that makes it a little easier to follow.
Yes, it could be the score sheet instead of the RFP could stay the same, but the score sheet could change the format as well.
Right. Member Olson.
Thank you. I was on the working group when we looked at the scoring criteria. Is it 2 years ago now or a year ago? One of the things that we at the time thought pretty strongly about was a lot of these things should be yes or no scoring. What we ended up doing with it at council recommendation was, you know, a 0 or 6, not a 0, 2, 6, or whatever the numbering used to be. But if it's a yes or no, it's a screening criteria that doesn't, I feel, need to be a decision made by the council members. because it's either yes or it's no, and there's objective evidence to say yes or no. So I think a lot of that stuff could go away. What should be scored are the things that people interpret differently, or that there could be reasonable minds differing about whether this is a good thing or a bad thing. Those are things that would merit a score. One of the other things I felt really strongly about, because I was a new member at the time that I was on the work group, was the scoring that we do basically is thrown out the window the second we decide who's coming for a hearing, and pretty much everybody comes for a hearing. None of the scoring is actually utilized other than as a, well, how well did this do earlier on? I had proposed then that we score after the hearings, when we get a chance to really ask people questions and get more information about things that they maybe didn't state very well in their proposal, that would be the time to make the scoring, and that's how we should do the allocation, but everybody hated that. I still think it's a good idea, and I actually noticed one of the project people said that it seems the criteria scoring disappears from the process after proposals are selected for hearing, and they recommend using criteria scoring as a component or a reference for the allocation making process. I still think that that is the way that we should be doing it. Just because we've always done it the other way doesn't mean that the other way is the best way. So that's just my thoughts.
Member Casey.
The trouble I have with making the whole exercise based on the scoring is that people can play games with the scores, and that's the reason that we shouldn't do that. And I feel very strongly about that. It's just fraught with manipulation opportunity, and that's the problem with it.
And Mr. Chair, if I may add, I think part of the issue, too, is that you have to do work all over the entire state, and so it's hard to numerically score a project in Northeast Minnesota working in a forest and then trying to score that and ranking it directly next to a project in Southwest Minnesota working out for aid. And so, if you only requested proposals to work on wetland projects, then I think you could go through and get a real hard, numerical score based on only wetlands, because that's all you'd be comparing them to. So we want to be careful, and again, if a project scores high, it still may not be the priority of the council, that maybe there's other funding priorities for that year for whatever reason that, 90% of the money the council feels should go to Northeast Minnesota, and so, just because it scores low or scores high in Southwest Minnesota doesn't mean it's going to get funded. So just things to think about.
Member Blackburn.
I just think this is a really huge task and probably our most important task that we have. And I also believe that it's really important for us to be very clear, very deliberate, very transparent in what we're doing. And I think a couple points have been brought up already that are really important. And it does make me wonder whether we should be indicating priorities prior to the call, or included in the call, what are our priorities for that year? And do we want to do that? Because it may be that there's some things that we feel are most important, the biggest threats, the biggest challenges that the state's facing. And I think that might be something we want to consider as well. What we're really looking at, we'll consider all these other things, but what we're really looking at is, a priority or whatever it might be. And I think that's something for us to consider, because dabbling money around the state may not be providing the biggest impact that we could have. I think as far as the process, we not only need to be clear in a RFP, but I think we need to be very clear about what our process is from beginning to end. And I would say that includes the process where we do the allocation of funds, to as clear of a degree as we can, because quite frankly, I've gone through one process so far, and I have to agree with some of the statements that were brought forward, that maybe the proposals don't matter, I'm not sure what matters, because it's very unclear to me. And suddenly we get to this process where we're allocating funds, and it seems it seems a bit arbitrary, and I feel like if we're really truly ranking and reading and having these folks come in and talk to us about their proposals, they should know what we're going to evaluate them on. They should know how does that money get allocated or decided on prior to it happening. I didn't know prior, you know, in this year coming into that meeting how it was going to go, and I walked out of here a very it was very unsatisfying that I'm not sure that I can walk away from this and say, wow, we really did what we wanted to do. I don't know, because I don't know what we wanted to do, because we didn't have priorities ahead of time. So I think that should be clear. There's comments about people don't know how many points things are worth. We need to be clear to people when they're writing these. What are they writing for? What does it mean? How important are these things? Some people didn't get points because they have food plots. I didn't realize that was our biggest priority. And so what do we, is that really what we want? I feel like it has to be defined better ahead of time. It has to be clear and transparent and deliberate.
Thank you. Yeah, I think all of those things are important. CAHL is supposed to outline the priorities each and every year, and it's subject to change, and that's what we should be talking about today. What are our priorities for next year? That's what we're here to do today. And so that's what we should be putting in there. That's what the CAHL is for. But I think there's a lot of merit to, but it's going to take a lot of time, and it's not going to happen in a meeting today. There's too much even to digest in the handout today to be effective today. But breaking out the different types of activities is one idea. Acquisition versus restoration versus enhancement. Breaking out the ecoregions, those are another, that's another area that we could do it. But, you know, if you're going to start hanging your hat on numbers, you better be very, very careful on how you put those numbers together, because they can be completely screwed up on the numbers when we're talking about something as subjective as what we're talking about here. I mean, there is some science to it for sure, and we should make it as quantitative as we can where it's possible to do that, but a lot of this stuff you're not going to be able to assign a number to. If it was that easy, we'd be done in June. It isn't that easy. So, you know, again, I think that this is one of the most important things that we do, how we lay this out. After the fact, you know, evaluating how the work was done 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, the restoration evaluations, that's another huge piece. But we're going to have a working group on this that is working on it all the time for continuous improvement. And that's what we should be doing. And it's not going to happen in these meetings the way that they're set up now. I mean, if we're going to do that, we should have the business part of the meeting in the first half and then the second half, and I'd be willing to stay later today to work on this thing. But it's going to take hours and many days and a lot of collaboration and a lot of cooperation. So there are things we can do that, you know, to break it out and toughen it up and make numbers count where they should count, but I think it's really a mistake to think that you're going to be able to numerically evaluate everything, because you won't be able to.
Thank you, Member Sharon.
Thank you, Chairman. I agree with Susan that this preliminary given scores, I find myself throwing darts once in a while. You know, what's the difference between 7 or 6 or 5 or 4 or what? And then I find myself learning much more and reevaluating my decisions after I hear the presentations, where I have, and we all have an opportunity to ask all the presenters what they have in mind. I also get confused when I look and see 6 curry proposals. I go, wow, I mean, you know, we all love curries, but are they all equal? Are they all, are some better than others? So I get bewildered by the number of them. And the other is, I get the feeling in reading the CAHL responses that I'm being told what they think I want to hear. And that's why in my comments I asked for some kind of a executive presentation at the top, so I don't have to wade through all. Basically, it's malarkey, and take my time doing that. I want to know who, what, where, when. We're moving the needle, and maybe on all the prairie projects, maybe they should be put together and see which one is best, because if you just finance prairie, all of the money would be gone. And I have found in my years here that the request used to be, oh my gosh, if they were $10 million, your eyes opened up. And now these requests are $18 million, $19 million, $15 million. I go, well, what happened here? I don't have an answer to that, but it makes me suspicious. Member Hartwell.
So, I hear the scoring question, you know, what's the value of the scoring? And I think that the thing I've noticed personally in the scoring is it makes me read the proposal. It makes me get clear whether I like, am okay with, or think it's not worth doing. Right off the bat, and then sharing that information with the rest of you. The fact that I rank something as a 5 and you read the same thing and rank it as a 3, if I'm consistent or more or less consistent in how I assign that 5 and how you assign that 3, in the end we have a level of consistency that helps us all understand generally what the perception is of the proposal. I think the real question for us is, if we eliminated the scoring and just heard every proposal that came in, what do we do about the 2, the 5, the 10 proposals that if we read them in advance, there's no way we would have wanted to hear them? And we've had a few of those. We didn't have any the last time, but we've certainly had some of those that we've just knocked out and not thought it was. So I kind of support the scoring, not because the outcome is critical, but because it forces us to take a close look at the proposal. And so I'm not as worried about numerically how do we make sure that it's accurate, as that we clearly understand the proposal and understand questions that come up as a result of that. And I think if I were trying to figure out in the scoring process how we do a better job, it would be how to take the questions that we all have in reading the proposal and go through that with some more detail than we do just it's a comment and whether or not someone reads the comments it isn't focused on. But if you have a significant issue with the proposal because of X, I'd really like to understand that and make sure that the council understands that. Whether you're right or wrong, I mean, you have a different way of looking at it than I do. And the reason there are 12 of us here is because there are different views. And we're not going to agree all the time, but the perspective that we can offer each other is good. I think the question of how do you break this up so it's more meaningful is a real challenge. And I'm not opposed to trying to figure out how to do that. But we have different regions of the state. We have different types of projects. We have projects that stretch beyond regions into multiple regions because of habitat type. And we'd have to be pretty clear how we want to divide it in terms of we're only going to do regional proposals or we're only going to do prairie and forest and there's no overlap. That's a tougher choice because our job isn't to do one specific thing. It's to throughout the state improve wildlife habitat and to balance things. And so I don't know how to do it. I think the discussion about how we do it is great because you know how we've done it hasn't resulted in bad outcomes, but I'll bet if we worked on it, it would result in better outcomes. And we ought to always be looking for the better outcomes and ask ourselves, how can we do this smarter? Because this is not an easy job. It is absolutely not an easy job.
Member Tilley.
Mr. Chairman, members, it occurs to me, and I'm brand new, but as I look through this, in the last scoring go-around, we each were able to award up to, 72 points per proposal. What if we were to limit the number of points that each of us could award so that we would truly see what our priorities, we think, personally, would be our priorities, which would really drive us to read all these proposals, I think. But just to limit the number of points each of us have, 100 points, 500 points, whatever it is that we get to sprinkle throughout this, we would pick what, because we are 12 different people, what we feel is our best priorities. Make us a little more focused and make other people more focused on us, but it would be a way of narrowing the selection process.
Member Olson.
Thank you. That's really interesting. I kind of like that. Just one thing I want to say is to concur with what Julie said. The transparency is missing, and the deliberacy of making a good judgment on each proposal and on the proposals as an aggregate is missing. We don't all do it the same way, and whatever it is we're going to do, we should do the same way, and every single person out here should know how we're doing it. They should be able to expect, you know, this is how this is going to go down, because here's the public scoring criteria, judgment, point system, whatever that the council has laid out. We can expect it's going to look like this, not here's the scoring that we laid down, and then we're going to do that. And that is what's been happening. The transparency is key. If I were in the audience and I had a proposal in front of this council, I would want to know what it is that I need to do to make my proposal as good as it can be. And we are not giving that information out to the people of the state, and I think that that's our obligation.
Member Wilkins?
This is a really interesting discussion, and there are a lot of good ideas here, and I think I would concur with, if you're having meetings that are 3-4 hours long, that to utilize those afternoons and have some working groups and really work through some of this thing, take groups of people on maybe different parts of the call. And one thing that I'm bothered about and have been, although I'm not a newcomer, I'm relatively new to the process, is I see that there are groups that think this is an entitlement, that they see these funds as an entitlement. And that's where we're getting the larger and larger numbers of millions of dollars coming from those groups that are seeing this as a significant part of their budget, because whether or not it's an agency that's not getting bonding dollars or whatever, that this has become an entitlement. And I really, really dislike this, that idea. And what it does is, when we talk about encouraging other groups and communities and partnerships to come in and ask for grants that are over the $400,000, what we're doing is we really are discouraging them, because they are up against groups that have these huge requests and have made this fund really part of their entitlement, part of their budget. They rely on this every year. So there is this given out there that we are going to be giving whatever agency or nonprofit, that they are going to get a significant amount of our money. And some of that's been written up in the press, too, and say, hey, how come? And we're continuing to go that direction. And this year's recommendations don't go the opposite direction. When you look at the the number of I had them do a breakdown for me. When you look at the number of groups that are new or small, like SWCDs, watershed districts, and such like that, there aren't many. There just seem to be, we seem to be discouraging them. That's wrong. That's totally wrong. We're not an arm of the legislature, you know, and the conversations are, well, we should do what the legislature wants. Well, no, we're an advisory committee. The legislature is made up of big boys and girls, and they take our recommendations and they do what they think is best with them. We don't, that's, our job is different than the legislature. The other thing I have concern about, the criteria not matching, and the criteria doesn't match when our end is set. We are going to be having a vote this afternoon, and our discussion will be held on whether or not we fund certain projects by things that are not in our criteria we scored on. We are going to vote on whether or not to fund some projects by whether or not people can hunt or fish. Now, that is not part of our call at all. That is not part of our criteria we score on. And yet, when it comes down to the last minute, we are going to say, yeah, but because we can't do such and such, or our constituency says that they want to do such and such, and you can't do that on that particular piece of property, and it's just not the Native American tribal property, but it's other properties as well. We're going to say, well, wait a minute, we're not going to vote for that. Wait a minute. In our call and in our scoring proposals, this was never listed. So now we are making decisions on allocations that we were not upfront with. We didn't tell people who submitted. There isn't a scoring proposal for, you know, can everyone hunt this property? Can everyone fish this property? You know, is there a differentiation between seasons? Is there this or that? That was never listed, and yet are we going to make a decision on that basis? Is that fair? I think we need to stick with what we decide in the criteria when we actually come down to these final allocation conversations. We need to stick with what we scored on and what we made the call on. So if you want these particular things to be part of the call, or the scoring, then put them in. But let's not bring them up at the 12th hour. So we've got to be very, very clear to people. I think we're saying two different things at different times of the year to folks out there. And I do think we need to have a process that, I don't know how to do it, that encourages, greatly encourages groups from across the state that we haven't heard from to come and join us.
Member Blackburn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I definitely agree with Councilmember Wilkins on the, you know, the clarity and the transparency, and we have to be making our recommendations based on what we're asking for. I mean, it just seems otherwise just a subversion of the process. It doesn't make sense to me if I was applying for it, and I would probably lose a little faith in the process. I think as far as the, you know, who gets the money, the best projects are the ones that should be getting the money, and I don't think that the way that it's the history of this allocation process or the recommendations on allocation has, the way that it's gone forward is it's increased the amounts that are submitted by many groups because of this, percentage of votes and how many dollars to allocate, and that's where I see the greatest potential for people to really, you know, I look at if I would have changed the way I did my allocations, boy, I sure could have changed that, you know, the recommendation amount greatly. And I think that's the biggest part where those numbers can really get played. And so people are submitting larger and larger amounts because they don't, I mean, the percentages that are allocated are averaged out by who submits the most amount for that particular project. So you have people that are submitting only on, you know, three or four projects, which is greatly skewing those numbers. And I don't think that's appropriate, and it really drives up what people are putting in those proposals because of that. So I don't know that it's because people think they have an entitlement, or they're just trying to get to a number that's actually workable for them, because we've kind of skewed the process for them. But I think with all this discussion, you know, getting back to the agenda item and what's at hand here, I think there's, you know, significant ideas, you know, that are being brought forward to improve the process, and that it is going to take some time and some work and just to move this forward. I would make a motion that we go forward with a work group or a subset of council members, and that we work on this process. And I do understand that it may be, you know, subject to open meeting law, and I think that's good. So Mr. Chair, I would bring forward as a motion.
I would accept your motion then to Member Blackburn to have bullet point number two, that we would have a subset of the council meet to come back with a recommendation to the council. Member Kingston.
Just a couple comments on that, and I'm interested in moving it ahead too, so I appreciate that. I would like staff to break out administrative versus non, like you talked about. I would like us to have future meetings, at minimum, have a continuation of that day be spent on the call-in criteria, and have a meeting of the whole or whoever can stay, and have it public notice. I would intend to stay, and I think a lot of you ought to. It should be public noticed, and we should just have it on the same day. It's a bit of a problem for me to be coming back and forth to the city, so if you can have it on the same day, that makes a lot of sense. Looking at the calendar next year, we're always starting at 8 and going till noon, so break at noon and come back at 1 o'clock, whatever, 12:30. So, you know, breaking out the administrative thing and then running by your administrative suggestions, running it past the council, I'm very happy with that. But some of the things that were brought up earlier, such as the hunting and fishing, that is not a criteria right now, but it is constitutional. So, you know, you can't just look at the numbers and expect that to tell the whole story. The constitutional language is the number one thing that we should be looking at, and to the extent that we can draw that into criteria and into the call, we need to do that. But I think we should, you know, pull on our boots and get into it like we did 2 years ago, only more so. Because we did it in a subgroup last time that met separately, and I don't, you know, people can't always make it, and I think it's a worthy project for the whole council, and I think that each and every one of us should be accountable. We should be sitting in the hot seat just as much as a proposer should. So I would be happy to do that. I'd like to march out what I do and show everybody what I do through it, including the proposers, for their critique. Because I'm one of the people that figures I'm not the smartest one in the room all the time. I'm plenty smart, and I do a good job. But I know that there are a lot of people who look at it from different angles, and anything I can do to make it better, that's what I'm all about. So I would stand there and have the proposers critique what I do.
Member Herbo.
I think we need to work on it, and I think it's great. I have two items that occurred to me after I sent in my first round of comments that I'd like to just put on the table for that working group to look for. One is, I've had a fair degree of frustration in trying to figure out what the priority WMA projects are. Everyone wants us to fund WMA acquisitions. And yet, how do you compare this one to that one? And I think we need to spend some time trying to figure out where is the highest priority to do this work. Because everyone's backyard, if it is your backyard, is the most important place. And our job isn't to be the person who's got the backyard, but to figure out what's best for the state. And so I'd like to put on that working group's agenda a discussion about how we do a better job of deciding what WMAs we ought to fund the acquisition and restoration of. Second is, it occurred to me that, you know, one of the things we constantly get feedback on that is loved about this program is the small grant program, where we're not seeing it and it's not subject to the same kind of process. I noticed in this year's allocation, the amount went down to that, and I understand it's because of, you know, big proposals here and the averages and all the rest, but I'd like us to consider a discussion before the allocation about how much we want to put into that program to take off the top. And so, you know, I'm just going to pull a number. $10 million goes into the small grants program. We had $105 million this year, so we'd have $95 that we'd allocate instead of making it part of the regular allocation process. So I'd like the working group to talk about that as well.
Member Olson?
One more thing that I was thinking of, talking about how some of these proposals over the last few years have blown up in size. You know, it's, we asked for $8 million, we got $4 million. Let's ask for $16 million next year and see if we can get $8 million. Okay, now let's ask for $36 million. We have a floor of it has to be $400,000 or more. I would propose that we consider putting in a cap to stop that, the people asking for funds that they couldn't possibly use within the grant period, like maybe 10 or 8 or 15 or something like that, but to actually consider that your proposal can't be more than X, just to stop that ridiculous level of people asking for more because they know if they get funded, they'll only get 25%, because I don't think that makes sense, and that's playing games with the numbers from the proposer side too.
Hey, we have,
there's one other comment, and it's in my notes, but I find myself very frustrated when we read a proposal for $7 million that has administrative costs of 3%, and we decide to fund it at $4 million, and the administrative costs go to 10%. And I'm overstating the case, but one of my thoughts is that we ask proposers in advance, if you don't get all the money, how does that change your administrative number? If you got 25%, 50%, 75%, tell us what the numbers would be in advance, so we don't find ourselves sort of, well, we approved it, and they're justifying something extra, and we can't really have a good discussion about that at that point. But if they commit in advance to thinking about it, it also gets to your, if you're going to ask for $30 million, what do you end up with, and what does that do to the administrative costs? Because I feel very differently about approving a proposal that had a lot of difference in the administrative costs as a percentage. If I knew in advance what that was going to be, we have no mechanism to do that until we get past the final allocation process and people are coming back. So I'd like to see us work on that in the working group.
Plenty of items for the working group to take on. The council. Senator Ingram.
Thank you, Chair. Just my input for what it's worth. I've been around since day one here and watched the process and seen a lot of success. I certainly don't take my guidance from what comes in the media, number one, whether it's good or bad or however it's perceived. Hunting and fishing is important to me, as former Chair Hartwell says. We're all different, and hunting and fishing rights access to me is very important. I mean, it is covered in the Constitution, so let's not just say that that's not part of it. The entitlement thing, I've never heard that before. I've never heard that before in this committee. This committee comes together, and if somebody comes in with a outlandish proposal, I think that's our job, is to cut it down to size. I mean, we can ask those questions. But I think of the Shining Star 170-some-thousand acres that we did, I think, second year in. If we're going to put a cap on something, we probably wouldn't be able to do a project like that again. And that was a like I said, pretty shining star. So We've got to be careful with that. We can't be careful too with the small projects. Now, we've always talked about small projects here, and I think Member Hartwell might be right. We should bring that up a ways, because if there are some small projects out there that aren't, you know, putting in for proposals, then we should encourage that. Certainly, absolutely. I think that's where we don't want to lose them because they don't dare get into the fray here because there's not enough funding. If there's anything we should be doing, we should be helping out those small town little projects out there that are very important for their areas. So just keep all those points in mind when you have your meeting. But that's what's important to me is that we have, I think, been pretty good as far as guardians of looking out for the small guy. And quite frankly, if the big guys are getting out of line, whether at an agency or the whoever, we're here to do the clipping. That's our job. So.
Further discussion with regard to the motion to establish a subgroup to work on the call.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think would it be beneficial if we actually named the members as well?
If the motion passes, I would ask for volunteers.
Well, I'd like to make a friendly amendment to make it what I recommended earlier, that it tail off after the regular meeting and that everybody stay who can stay and have a public notice.
Motion to amend?
Yes, sir.
All right.
If you can look at that.
Okay, the maker of the motion is willing to accept that as part of the motion. So it would be the second bullet, but it would be the entire the council or as many members that can stay to be a part of that subgroup. Further discussion then with regard to the call or the motion?
One, just to make sure that the administrative part is carved out.
Administrative versus not.
Correct.
No further discussion?
Mr. Chair, if I could, so you're talking about the end of this meeting?
We could. I could.
No, and you wouldn't have public notice. You don't have
public. Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought you were talking about
this. No, I mean ongoing until the next year.
Okay.
Yeah. Or more.
Member Tilley.
Mr. Chair, members, do we want to have the motion provide for the naming of a presider of that group?
Are you volunteering?
No.
I think you should be led by staff and just have a general meeting.
But somebody should run the meeting.
Staff.
That's put staff in an uncomfortable position. It ought to be a policy maker, in my opinion, leading the meeting.
I'm probably right. James. No. Oh, all right. Okay. I will. I'd love to.
Okay. Member Kingston will share that. Those discussions.
I will if you're at every single meeting, Mary.
I will miss it.
Call in.
And we really need to have it concluded by February so that we can include it in the call for March.
That is correct.
It'll be the January and February meeting.
We'll be going till midnight. I'm just warning you.
No further discussion. The chair would then call a question on the motion to have the council or as many members as possible serve as a subgroup to work on the call. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Same.
No.
I just don't think we need a lot of fixing. I mean,
motion then carries, and so January, February meetings after the regular meeting will be for work on the funding request. Thank you. We'll move to item number 7 in the Treasurer's Report, and Member Blackburn is the Treasurer. So we'll go to you, Ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we were going to have Michelle Mitchell with us today, but she had her baby. Was that yesterday? Yeah. So, yeah. She really didn't want to be here. No, she would have been bringing good news anyway. So everybody should have the summary in front of them of the forecast, including the 5% reserve. So the table at the top, you have the three rows of carry forward from the prior year, the sales tax receipts, and the investment income. And so the first box, end of session 2015, that was actually the special session. That was the forecast at that time. The box on the right that has the November forecast, that is the one that is just being released today. And so you can see that the forecast from the end of the special session 2015 to current has increased. And so what this means, if we go through the farthest right column, for FY17, the carry forward from the previous year is $13,606,000, and that is that the unappropriated amount and the unobligated balance. The sales tax receipts are $107,139,000. Investment income is $973,000, and so that has total resources for the forecast, $121,718,000. So, excuse me, I think I read something a little bit wrong there, but so what this means for us is that we have that appropriated amount, the unobligated balance, that leaves $115,754,000 to appropriate, to recommend for appropriations. The difference between that and the council recommendations is $3.945 million. And so if we were to keep the 5% in reserve with this adjusted forecast, the improved forecast, it would allow us to recommend spending another $3.945 million in spending. It has some explanation for the differences from the end of the session 2015. But just to, I guess, start a discussion, what I would do at this point then is to see the will of the council, I would make a motion that we increase our recommendations $3,945,000 so that we can get more projects on the ground but still keep that 5% reserve going into the next fiscal year.
We have a motion by Member Blackburn to increase the allocation to $3.945 million. Is it just clear?
Just to clarify, and I think I'm reading it right, that the 111.809 does include the full $2 million that went to Marsh Lake, right?
Yes.
So that was prior, kind of carving down the 5% reserve, but this makes it a full 5% again, with a 3.945, a full 5%.
That's my understanding.
Okay.
Member Hartwell.
So, just to follow up with the comment that I made earlier, I think we've shortchanged the small grant program. And it would be my suggestion, I don't want to make a recommendation, but my suggestion at this point, that we consider funding that at a $10 million level, which would be an extra $3.5 million, which is most of the $3.9 million, to try to get the money out into the local communities as quickly as we can. So that was my thought when I saw the increased numbers of what we might do with it, but it is just a suggestion.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to keep my motion clean and just keep it first. Is the will of the council to spend this additional money to make recommendations on that, and then I think we can discuss
where
it goes after that.
So the motion is to increase the council's recommendation $3.945 million in addition to the $111,809,000. No further discussion. Chair would call the question on that motion. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion is carried. Then I think it's appropriate to have discussion with regard to where the additional monies would go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll kind of go off of what David has just talked about. I would like to have the DNR come forward if they are available to tell us what or how the small grants program was funded and how many were not funded, how many dollars worth weren't funded this year.
I'll find her.
Mr. Rosen?
I can go find Jessica. Jessica Lee could best answer that question if I might be able to just try to find her. Jane.
Okay.
I know 37 applied, 16 were funded, but I don't know the dollar amounts.
Well,
Member Kingston.
In the past, the monies that we recommended for their appropriations were $8.4 million, $10 million, $8.5 and $8.4, so I'm not ready to jack it up to 10 at this point. But I'd be willing to listen to what Jessica has to say for sure. I think it's worthy of an increase, but I don't think we should put the whole amount there at all.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, everybody.
It would be fun to see the percentages comparative to the larger grants. So what I'm saying is, what percentage of the larger grants are turned down versus the smaller grants? So there's a total of the smaller grants that we appropriate. What percentage is turned down? There's a total of the larger ones, and what percentage of that is turned down?
Yeah, well,
I don't know if that's
we
fair.
Fund. Yeah, I don't know if that's fair either. We fund what, like 20? Yeah, so that's like 30% of what, 30 to 40%. We typically fund 35%, 40% of the
large ones.
Yeah, the large ones. I don't know. I think it's apples and oranges. But it's interesting to ask. I don't think it's controlling, though. There she is.
Yes, it is. The question is, are there small grants that are not being funded because of lack of dollars?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. For the record, Jessica Lee, CPL Program Coordinator. This fall, we just finished our round one, and our traditional round, we funded about 38%. We had over $11 million in requests.
Member Kingston.
I really wanted to not talk about this today, but might as well. There are some projects that are funded through the small grants program that were rejected by this council. And our processes are different. And we're in the midst of a discussion about making ourselves as a council more better acquainted with the process. And thus far, the discussions that we've had are that the experts that you have, that are the professional conservation and wildlife people who evaluate the proposals, I'm very comfortable with that. But what I'm not comfortable with is more than one instance of projects that we have rejected that then get funding through DNR for projects that we have not approved, such as Lake Shady, for one. That might have come through a DNR big project also, but I am not comfortable with the two processes being dovetailed yet. However, I think the vast majority of what is done is absolutely great, and I would be in favor of upping the amount. But you fund 38%. What's been the average over what you've been, you know, what the proposals are?
Chair and council members, in the past, I think it was closer to funding about 2/3. This year, we had a remarkable amount of applications. And that was just for the traditional round, I'd like to point out. For the metro round, we didn't spend all of our money. But for the traditional, we did spend all of it right away, and only about 1/3 of the projects were funded.
Member Blackburn.
Is there a motion on the table?
Well, I need to ask
my question would be then to staff, what percentage of the larger grants do we fund in comparison? Or is that not a fair comparison?
It's a point of interest, though.
Did you intend to make a motion to place 3.5 million into the?
Well, I would do that. Okay. I would like to know. But I would like to know the percentages of what we do if it's somewhat comparison, and we're going to address the Member Wilkins' idea of some of these smaller ones not getting looked at. And I've always been in favor of the small grants program. So if it would take that motion, I would certainly make the motion to put all that money towards the small grant program. There's no point of discussion.
I accept your motion to put all the additional dollars to the small grants program. Member Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a fan of the small grants program too, but I wanted to bring up the point. We talked a little bit earlier, some members did, about how we maybe don't put enough weight in the scoring. And there's a couple of projects, including the small grants program, they've got votes from all 12 of us that are not fully funded. And where I'm a fan, certainly would understand putting some of this money towards the small grant program consistently, and I see Mr. Lincheski in the audience, I would want to hear from him. His organization, Trout Unlimited, is funded only at about 2/3 of the money they requested. And I will say, and I've said it before, that this is one of the best dollars that we spend, and I would certainly hope that before we allocate all this additional budget money that we hear from Trout Unlimited and what work's not being done by them, because I don't think they inflate their ask, and I think it's an organization that should probably be rewarded some of it. And the same point, we probably should hear from DU. They were one that also got 12 positive votes and are funded at actually a level more, down about 30-40% of their ask. I am also concerned that some of the ones lower down, I think, have inflated their numbers potentially, and anything we can do to stop inflating numbers, I think, would be, I don't have the answer. But I guess, Mr. Chair, I would like to hear from some of those folks at some point. Thank you.
Member Casey.
I'm exactly on the same page as Representative McNamara. I would just add PA04 to hear those that are above 60 today at minimum.
Member Blackburn?
I think they are WA.
Trout Unlimited is the HREO1 Tallgrass Prairie, PA04 Nature Conservancy, WA01 Pheasants Forever.
Those are the ones I'd like to use.
I concur, Mr. Chair, thank you. I concur with Representative McNamara and Council Member Kingston. I think that we should look at those that did have the 12 majority unanimous ranking and consider them all. I'm not in favor, I'll just say that right now, of putting all of the money into the small grant.
All right, do we want to hear from, is it Trout Unlimited then?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair and members. My name is John Lancheski. I'm with Minnesota Trout Unlimited. And this is a pleasant surprise. You kind of caught me off guard here. I can just say we do have some very good projects that wouldn't be funded based on the current recommended allocation. So we do feel we have the capacity to get these projects done. We don't just seek a block chunk of money and then figure out how to allocate it. These are actually real projects that we, you know, kind of do the planning on and then propose those. And so we did strike a number of projects in the work plan approval process. So there's a couple in particular we would love to see another one funded in southeastern Minnesota. And then there's one in the Duluth area as well. And then, you know, we do have a third project that is sort of money that can be used on a number of streams to work on vegetation. But we do have a number of specific projects. We would love to have additional dollars, but we're thankful for anything we get.
Questions for Mr. Lancheski? Everything's good.
Very humble, John. Very nice. What's the Duluth one?
The Duluth one is the Miller Creek project, and that's one that the DNR was also looking at. That was one where we're anticipating a lot of leverage from that. However, the we're looking for federal dollars on that as a match. The initial attempt at getting that did not succeed. We're confident it will in the spring of next year. So it's a high priority for DNR, for us, for the Duluth area, for the local SWCD office that's really taking the lead on this project. So
is that the lower reaches or the?
Oh, that's the upper one. It's just above the mall area. It's you know, it's really accessible to everybody. It's actually above the point where any sort of all the runoff from parking lots would impact the stream.
So it's above Best Buy and Super One.
Right up behind from Kohl's on upstream towards the, I think it's the U-Haul, but there's actually a stretch in there that was straightened. It actually has good groundwater and cold flow, and so it would be a remeander project and it would be very accessible to the public. Good project. A lot of interest in it.
Have to put a parking lot in. Coming right in off the lower trunk.
Yeah.
Okay.
Further questions for Mr. Lancheski?
Yes, thank you, Chair. So would there be administrative costs with this additional dollars? Would you be clear about that?
Yeah, well, you know, I heard the comments. I guess I should reveal that we're not some big organization. We don't have a bunch of a permanent staff in Minnesota. We are a grassroots volunteer-driven organization. Because these are reimbursement-based grants and we don't have that kind of money, we use our national organization to be the piggy bank. They front the dollars to pay all these invoices and then they seek the reimbursement. So we do use one national staff person to handle that paperwork. That's the extent of our sort of administrative staff overhead, is that one person. And, of course, because his effort is also based on reimbursement only, it's strictly how much time does it take to do that paperwork. Typically, we haven't been using anywhere near what we've put in the grant, so there will be some more administration from handling that paperwork, but a lot of it is, you know, it's the actual work of getting that project done, you know, if it's engineering costs or whatever. I mean, I don't really consider that administrative. So we really don't have administrative overhead. We're pretty lean and mean. So I wouldn't envision that we wouldn't change sort of the personnel number we list in our proposal. And again, I think the pattern is that we don't tap that, and then what we'll seek to do is roll that into more work. You know, with the staff approval on the work plan. So ours is very much kind of based upon the project. It's not a flat sort of, you know, administrative percentage. Our national organization doesn't take that at all. It's strictly for the one person's time who's handling the reimbursement. Our national organization eats all the other accounting office, you know, all the other stuff they do.
Mr. Velko. Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think it might be beneficial for the council to know for the TU if there's a cut or a threshold
for the amount of funding to actually do another project. You had said that you know, you ask for project money for each one. So if the council was to give you an extra $100,000, does that get you to another project, or where is your threshold for your different projects?
Thank you. So, members, unfortunately, I didn't bring my budget sheet with me. This caught me off guard. I do know that approximately the approximately $400,000 would be necessary. We're doing some big the other two projects I talked about are large. So the one in the southeast would take about $400,000 to do that project. And the one on Miller Creek in Duluth would take about $400,000.
Further questions for Mr. Lucheski?
Thank you for being here.
I just want to say thank you, and thank you, Representative McNamara. It's a great compliment, but thank you for all your work.
The next one we'd like to hear from is on the WA-01.
PA-04.
That was WA-01.
Well, PA-04 is higher.
And
TNC and PF.
PA-04 is the Nature Conservancy. WA-01 is Pheasants Forever. I know Pheasants Forever is here. I don't.
You want me to come down?
Yes.
I can see and see.
Pheasants Forever, please. Yes.
Mr. Chair, council members, again, pleasure to be here and pleasantly surprised with the conversation. Pheasants Forever, historically and looking forward, has more projects that are high priority and are easily fundable through our program than we have the dollars to deliver. And we could definitely use this potential funding for additional projects. In fact, we just had a pretty large project up in the Nome County coming before us that we're going to be looking to try to amend into a future proposal. This one's a big one, 980 acres, and something that's extremely high priority. So we could definitely put the money to good use. Administratively, we would be happy to keep our costs the exact same despite any potential increase here today.
Member Kingston.
Thank you. The original request was 19.3, and historically for this project, the WPA project program, you've gotten 5.6, 3.5, 9.8, 5.4, 6.8, 6.7.3, 7.6. So how did you arrive at 19 based on all the numbers that you've used? That you've realized in the past 6-7 years.
Mr. Chair, members, we kind of look at the projects we have available, again, looking ahead 13 months to 2 years and the timelines and try to base our funding proposals based on the amount of projects that we have, knowing that some of those projects are going to fall off between now and then.
Member Blackburn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to comment on two things, and it's not specific really to this proposal, but one thing that somebody had said in regards to the tour, it was one of the comments that was submitted, was that it wasn't valuable, and it was extremely valuable for me. I learned a lot, and one of the things that I really learned was when we were out, and I think it was at the U.S. Force, or U.S. Fish and Wildlife area, learning about why, like in the Prairie region, you might get applications from Pheasants Forever, from the Nature Conservancy, from U.S. Fish and Wildlife, from all the DNR, from all of those groups, and how, based on the funding and the requirements of the funding, they work together as a group in order to purchase that land and in order to get it into the right hands. but not, there's some requirement, I can't remember it off the top of my head, about federal purchasing, federal agencies purchasing, I don't remember all those requirements, but there are some. And so that's one of the reasons why, for instance, when if we were to look at, Prairie, separating out all the sections in the application process, you wouldn't necessarily eliminate one group or another because they work together and they have different priorities and different restrictions on the funding and what they can do with it. But together, they're able to make large habitat complexes like we saw when we were out in Spicer looking at that tour. There are some really amazing projects that were done there. And it looked kind of, if you only looked at the which organizations were involved in the acres, it looked kind of piecemeal. But when you look at the entire complex together, it's phenomenal. And those are the things that I think we should encourage. So I just, on this kind of project and what they're doing as well as all those other groups, they do work together extensively. And for me, it was just very important to see that on the ground in reality.
I guess I'd like to go back to staff members, Velka's question. What would it take to do another project with the Pheasants Forever, or would you just... How would you look to fund that?
Mr. Chair, members, it's really difficult to say at this point. A lot of our costs are estimated until you get an appraisal and share those appraisals with the sellers to see if their expectations are being met. It's really hard to say what it would mean in terms of projects. What I can tell you is, we're going to be looking for non-state sources to match any potential increase in allocation here. And we're going to stretch our dollar, like we do in all of our programs, to make sure the maximum number of acres get purchased and protected with any increase.
Further discussion with regard to the motion? Or go ahead. Questions for President Sperber then? Thank you for being here. Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My opinion on our windfall here, and apparently we have a windfall at the state of Minnesota to $1.87 billion. And so things are going well. But on the subject of small grants, again, this is one time. And there was an extraordinary amount of applications, and so I would certainly favor that. This is just my opinion of how the probably Senate more than anything else would react to this, and that is on a one-time basis. I don't think you'd ever have any problem with small grants. Particularly when there's this many, and I think that would be looked on favorably.
Yes, we have a motion by Senator Ingebrigtsen to put the 3.945 to the small grants program. Member Tilley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I just wanted to voice my support for this, too. I think those small grants get really people on the ground. There's a lot of in-kind contributions. Much of that work is done by volunteers in the communities, and it's nice to be able to have projects that everybody sees, and I fully support that.
Thank you. Member Kingston.
Can I offer a really, really friendly amendment? Okay. I will. I would be interested in giving half of the amount to small grants and the other half being split between the three high scorers. That would be the PFW PA, Project WA01, TNC Tallgrass Prairie, PA04, and TU HRE1. I don't want to split it out any more than that because it's really burdensome to rewrite all of these things, and I think that the highest score should be rewarded. That was a universal opinion of us when we went through the criteria that we have, and that's a big bump for the CPL program. Half of it is.
I don't see that as a friendly amendment, so I'm willing to accept it. Senator,
Mr. Chair, and thank you. Are these not the bigger grants, the bigger proposals?
Yes, sir.
That we just talked about?
Yes,
sir. Shooting for the little higher numbers so we can get a lower number? Didn't we just talk about that in our discussion?
I'm not following you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not familiar with exactly the appropriations of each grant. I don't have them in front of me, but the ones you're talking about.
They're the ones that we evaluated the highest.
Right.
Yes.
They're the ones we evaluated the highest. Are they the biggest asks, some of them?
One of them, not necessarily, no.
Okay.
They all ask for more than what this would afford them, way more than what this would afford them.
Probably ask for three.
Yeah.
What percentage did we appropriate to them roughly?
Trout got 61.4%.
Oh.
No, I'm sorry, 66%. TMC got 39% of their ask, and PFWPA got 29% of their ask.
There's no further discussion with regard to the motion then to put 3.945 to CPL1. Chair would call the question. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign?
No.
Division.
So, Mr. Chair, this doesn't include...
No. This is to put the 3.945 with the $7,438,000 in the CPL grant program.
Okay.
All those in favor, excuse me, point of order?
Point of order, wondering, can we direct that if we put this money in the grant program that it would go to the outstate or however they divide it and not the metro, because they're not spending the metro money anyway? Is that even necessary?
No.
Not necessary.
I guess we'd have to ask Ms. Lee. I'm not sure where all of those unfunded small grant programs are. Are they outstate or metro?
Outstate.
They're outstate already. All right, that is division. So those in favor of the motion to place the $3.945 million with CPL1, show of hands, please. Six, four. And those opposed? Six to six. Motion loses.
Can I make a motion, please?
Motion by Member Casey.
I would like to propose that half of the surplus go to the CPL program and the other half be split equally between HRE01, PA04, and WA01, the top three scorers.
Okay, motion by Member Kingston to split the $3.945 million between CPL program and HRE01, WA01, and PA04. Do we know what those dollars would be for each of those? What is the... Can we calculate that so we can...
Mr. Chair.
Have an understanding. Member Blackburn?
Oh, wow, they're calculating that. I would be much more in favor of splitting that nearly $4 million between the four equally. And I think, you know, with the small grants program, I fully support it. And we've heard a lot about how many didn't get funded, but we also don't have any evaluation of the quality of those. I mean, we aren't going to fund them all. I mean, not every project is fundable. So we don't really know out of those that were not funded, which of them weren't funded because they weren't quality projects. And I think it's the same thing with what we have here. There's all of these projects are quality projects. It's the entire question about which ones are most deserving at this particular point. And I don't think that we have enough information to provide more funds to that program versus those three that we have already all unanimously voted for. I'm I would prefer that we split it. I would accept that as a friendly amendment. If the chair so sees it.
Chair, to that point, if I could, to Julie's point is that we have the DNR doing that for us, and there hasn't been anything wrong with the program that I know of. So I'm not sure that's a real fair way of evaluating those that were turned down because they weren't qualified. We put that in the hands of the DNR to do that.
Mr. Chair.
So I guess maybe she's here. She could comment on that, I guess.
I just want to say I never said that that was the case. I said that it's an issue of quality, and you can only fund so many projects. And I believe that we also have our job of funding our projects, and we've ranked these unanimously. And I don't understand why those wouldn't also have a priority.
Member Hartwell.
I can be flexible on this, and will be, but I'd just like to point out that just because I voted for something doesn't mean I voted for a certain level of funding that was in agreement with everyone else. And I think all of us voted for these projects, but we all probably had different perspectives as to how much money ought to be allocated to each of them. And so I'm not as concerned that they got 12 votes and therefore we should fund it as I am about whether or not it's the right money to spend.
All right, let's get for you to split the 3.945. That would result in $1,972,500. That would go to the CPO. Taking Member Kingston's motion at this point. And each of HRE01, WA01, and PA04 would receive $657,500 each under that motion. Member Kingston.
Or if we split it four ways equal, it'd be $986,250 for all four of each of those four.
Just a point of clarification, we do round to the nearest thousand. And the motion should, whatever we do,
should reflect that.
Reflect a round number versus a number in the right staff ratio.
I'll amend my own motion to reflect what Julie said.
So I think it's a different motion altogether. I mean, it's a division.
Yeah, I can withdraw my motion. Thank you
for right.
Holding my hand.
Member Wilkins.
You probably finally settled on the number of votes.
Very careful.
I keep coming back to the CPO grants and the smaller organizations. I've seen so many smaller organizations just really loving this program. But one thing they always have to do is they have to come up with, I think it's 25%, am I correct? No. 10%. And some of these others don't come up with 10. I think Child Unlimited puts in a lot more than 10 because they got all their volunteers. But I think probably getting most bang for the buck, I think probably that it really is, you know, half to, I don't know if you want to amend your motion to change, but half to the CPL program and the other half divided might be get us more farther in the long run because we would have more matching.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'd like to make a motion that we split the remaining funds of $3.945 million between CPL, PA04, WA01, and HRE01.
That would result in,
$986,000.
And $987,000 to CPL.
Yeah.
Okay. Member Blackburn's motion is accepted and have discussion.
Mr. Chair, I would then amend that motion to have half go to CPL and then the remainder be divided in thirds.
I think that's making a major change in the motion. I don't think
that's what amendments do.
Well, but they don't make, they need to be friendly, and that's, this is dividing up what the intent was. She's changing the amount that would be applicable to each of those, and I think you're taking some of that away from what her intent is. And so that's why I don't think it's a friendly amendment.
Well, I didn't, but I didn't say, Mr. Chair, I didn't say it was a friendly amendment.
I know. I accept your discussion and opinion there, but so the motion right now is to take and divide it equally between four projects.
I'm confused because I think he has the right to make an amendment which we can vote for or against, but from a process standpoint, I think he has the right to do that, whether we like it or not.
Okay. I'll accept your advice on that.
But there are smarter people in the room than me.
Do you want to click?
Mr. Chairman, every member has a right to amend. The only thing you can't do is an amendment to an amendment. You can't have three layers or whatever. But there's a motion on the table. Any member has a right to move an amendment to that motion. And I think that is in order.
I will then accept Senator Sackett's amendment to that motion to have half go to the CPL and the remaining be divided equally between the other three projects, HRE 01, WA 01, and PA 04. So we have the amendment before us. There's a discussion on the amendment. And we'll have a vote. All those in favor of the, in support of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
No.
The motion is carried. The amendment is approved, and that would
the amendment.
Now you have, Mr. Sherman, you have the motion now in front of you. It's Jane's motion with the amended version. So you still have to vote on the overall.
I actually withdrew mine,
even though it was the same thing.
Oh, remember Blackburn?
Well, Blackburn.
Yes.
Yeah. As amended,
I think the amendment carries.
Well, we have to vote on the motion. I just think we need to clarify that we're rounding this to the nearest thousand, because that will drive staff crazy. Don't round it to the nearest thousand. So I'm wondering if we have duly would accept that by numbers.
The kids was rounded. The kids wasn't.
Yeah, the original motion was.
I'm just clarifying it so that staff doesn't follow our instructions and then living up with
the executive director has been working feverishly here to.
Actually, I think Amanda comes up with a lot faster than I do. Mr. Chair, to the point, if we're rounded, one half would be $1.974 million. Amanda, please correct me if I'm wrong, that would be the CPL. And $657,000 to each of HRE 01, WA 01, and PA 04.
Okay. All right, so then we have the motion as amended before us. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign?
No.
Motion is carried.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if we could ask the DNR to come back. I just want to clarify, and I thought it would be good to get on the record, that the criteria for both the Metro and the Outstate small grants program, they use the same criteria. That it was just coincidental that the Outstate was a smaller percentage. There still was, the criteria was similar for both projects. I guess I would feel better to get that on the record because there was some maybe discussion that maybe in the metro we just gave all the money out and there was no criteria, and I want to make sure that there was criteria involved.
I'll ask Ms. Lee to come forward. Do you understand the question that Representative McNamara has?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, we do use scoring criteria, the same criteria. They are scored separately, the metro and the traditional. And we do have a breaking point that naturally kind of forms, and we do not all the metro projects just to give money for them.
Satisfied?
Thank you, Ms. McGill.
Isn't there a difference in the criteria? There's some difference between them.
Council members and chair, no, there is not. We debated having two separate criteria. We ended up modifying one slightly to be more flexible to fit the metro criteria so that we could score them all in the same process.
So what is that difference?
We added wildlife benefits for the public beyond just hunting and fishing. And we also added habitat corridors rather than just the quantity of habitat land.
Detective Director Johnson?
Ms. Lee, from an availability standpoint for the funds, could you please speak to that slight difference there as well, metro versus outstate?
Yeah, sure, Mr. Chair, Council. If I understand your question correctly, are you asking how much we had available this year for each?
No, what I'm asking is, if I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that in the initial run, there's money dedicated, of course, for metro versus state. And then after that initial run, there's reallocation availability.
Mr. Chair, currently, the way the corporation is written, we cannot move those funds around, so we will have a second metro round this year. Last year, we were able to spend the majority of the metro money in the second round. We haven't had a second traditional round for many years.
I'm sorry, I misspoke on that. What I was meaning, what I should have said, was that the metro dollars are not restricted to only metro fund. They can decide to go into the metro or into the statewide. If a project were to come into metro from the metro area, they could apply in either realm, could they not?
Correct.
Yes. I'm sorry. The clumsy way of me wording it. Thank you.
Member Dewey.
Mr. Chair, I just so I understand, the money is divided in the metro rural pots. People apply, but there's a, once you score them all, there are some projects that don't score high enough to get funding, even though there's money available in one pot or the other. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
And when that occurs, then you have a second round?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions for Ms. Lee? Thank you again.
Thank you.
Chair is going to take a 10-minute bathroom break at this time. Chair,